Hey everybody, Scott Horton here. Ever think maybe your group should hire me to give a speech? Well, maybe you should. I've got a few good ones to choose from, including how to end the war on terror, the case against war with Iran, central banking in war, Uncle Sam and the Arab Spring, the ongoing war on civil liberties, and of course, why everything in the world is Woodrow Wilson's fault. But I'm happy to talk about just about anything else you've ever heard me cover on the show as well. So check out youtube.com/Scott Horton Show for some examples, and email scott@scotthorton.org for more details. See you there. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Our next guest is Rob Wharton, and he is executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University School of Law. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Just fine, thank you.
Well, good. Very happy to have you here. And thanks for doing this work. You know, I realized when I saw something on, 2020 when I was like 11, about some public interest group out there suing the government over something that they did wrong to somebody else. And I remember thinking, wow, you know, if those people didn't show up at work that day, it just wouldn't have gotten done. And that guy would still be rotten in a cage. And so it takes people actually doing the work to, for example, get the innocent sprung or, you know, get the horrible regulation repealed or whatever it is. And you're doing the work. And so thank you for that on behalf of the powerless out there. One of the powerless. So not that I'm in jail, thank goodness, but. If I was, I wouldn't be able to do anything about it. I would need something like this. So, good work. Thanks for even existing. So, I saw this headline at allgov.com. Report catalogs exonerated Americans who served more than 10,000 years in prison. That's what your work says?
Yes, that's right.
That is just absolutely incredible. I mean, 10,000 years, that's... let's see. Well, more than three times recorded history. I guess there's some tablets that they found a scrap of something going back further than that, but that's pretty much three times written human history there. Okay, good. That's a long time. How many different individuals are we talking about, and they're doing an average of how long in prison?
Well, we're talking about 1,000 and an average of more than 10 years each. These are just cases since that we've documented since 1989, these are only the cases in which innocence has been established and basically acknowledged by the government itself. There are many, many more wrongful convictions, and so 10,000 years is literally just the tip of a proverbial iceberg. It's much worse than that.
Wow. You know, I hate to say it, but it's almost like the big lie kind of a theory where it's the big error that's just too big to admit, right? Because everybody knows that the democracy is self-correcting, that the court system as it's set up, the criminal justice system, is built in this adversarial way where somebody really didn't do it, then they don't have to go to jail. The cops probably wouldn't even try to pin it on them. And the system works, and we all know that. At least we have that. And what you're saying is, oh, no, the system has been working all wrong and nothing like an episode of Matlock or Law and Order or whatever for I don't know how many decades in a row. And it needs fixing so bad it would take all of our attention for 10 years to get it right finally.
I mean, we've known about wrongful convictions, going back many, many years. The very first one that is really documented in this country happened in 1819 in Manchester, Vermont. A couple of guys two guys named Bourne were convicted and sentenced to death for the murder of their brother-in-law. Before they were executed, fortunately for them, their brother-in-law showed up alive and well and living in New Jersey. And so these cases go back many, many years. Until very recently, in fact, the last decade of the 20th century, prosecutors and judges would get away with telling the public, when somebody's case was overturned and they were ultimately released. This is just one of those cases where the system can't meet its heavy burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But now, you know, thanks to DNA and advances in other kinds of evidence, we know that there are many, many wrongful convictions. People who are convicted and sometimes sentenced to death for murders that they did not, in fact, commit. So it's an amazing situation, actually.
Yeah, you know, in fact, that caught my eye, and it rang real true to me, that part of this report is that it seems like there's more deliberate misconduct in murder cases. And I wonder why that is. Is it just because the cops really convinced themselves about the wrong guy? Or
why is it? It's because there's more pressure on these kinds of cases. You know, I don't think...
But it seems like some of the pressure, some of the incentive would be to not let the real murderer go free, no?
Well, that, you know, that ought to be the incentive. But
it's in there somewhere.
In many of these cases, is like the police don't really have any suspect. And then they develop a theory as to who might have done it. And then they pursue that theory at the expense of all other theories. And just disregard evidence that might point to someone else. And, of course, one of the sad things about this is that every time you convict the wrong person, that means that the right person is still on the street to continue to commit similar crimes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I read this thing at Cracked, actually, with all these sad facts about America's legal system, and I don't remember all the numbers, but they were referring to some studies about jurors and just how little they understand. They don't even know what reasonable doubt means, and it's interesting to me because I remember not understanding what reasonable doubt meant when I was a kid and having it explained to me and still not quite having my head wrapped around it. And so now I'm thinking that's the mindset of the jurors. They don't quite get it.
There's no real definition. Reasonable doubt is what any person might think it is. In some states, such as Illinois.
Well, like this thing was saying that they didn't even understand that the burden of proof is not on the defendant to prove that he did not do it. And so when they don't see the defense attorney put on a case proving that he didn't do it, then they default with the officials who all wouldn't be saying he did it if he didn't do it.
Well, I think that that's true. And, you know, we have seen now in all of these documented cases, I mean, this 1,050 that we've documented on the National Registry of Exonerations, in about 10% of these cases, people actually falsely confessed. They were somehow coerced into confessing to crimes that they did not commit. And then there's, really positive information after the fact that, they didn't really do it. And we've known for years, I mean, that there's a real problem with eyewitness identification testimony, with the use of so-called jailhouse snitches by prosecutors. That's somebody who's in jail who comes forward in exchange for leniency in the case against them and says, oh, hey, this guy told me he did it. This kind of evidence is totally unreliable. And it's resulted in hundreds, thousands of wrongful convictions over the years.
Right. Now, the thing is, if we go back to just, basically what one could glean from reading the Constitution about it or learning in school about the Constitution not in college or law school, but I just mean in, regular high school or junior high about the way the system works and whatever. It seems like somebody really did bend over backwards to at least make it seem fair where, the prosecutor doesn't work for the judge and you get a jury, especially in Texas, you can get a jury over anything if you want one. And, you have, the right to a defense attorney who has, all of these powers to demand every bit of, evidence that the prosecution has. And you have all of these protections against ex post facto and secret evidence and bills of attainder and all of these things. It seems like someone's really trying to at least make it fair, but it's just, and you mentioned informants and a couple other things, but I wonder if there's like a key thing that you think is just going wrong. Do we need all elected judges instead of appointed, or the other way around, or professional juries?
I think we ought to have, appointed judges. We ought to have merit selection, not elected judges. If we have elected judges, we can expect that they will behave like what they are, which is politicians. But the real problem is that we have, really people don't appreciate, jurors and I think judges and sometimes lawyers don't appreciate what reasonable doubt really ought to mean. And in virtually every one of these 1,000-plus cases, if you went back and looked at the evidence that was presented at trial, there was evidence that, to my mind at least, would have created reasonable doubt then. But it didn't create reasonable doubt in the mind of the jurors who convicted this person. And yet the person, sometimes went to prison for, we've documented cases in which people have spent up to 40 years in prison for crimes that they didn't commit as a result of juries, I think, really not appreciating the whole idea of what reasonable doubt really should mean.
Hmm. Well, what about, is it different state by state, or what about a case where the judge can't believe that the jury convicted this guy, and he's surprised it even got by the grand jury, but he had to hold the trial, but there ain't no way I'm letting you send this guy to prison. Do they have the right to just cancel a guilty verdict and say, no, forget that?
Yes. In every case, a judge could say, could issue a judgment, what's called a judgment in OV, notwithstanding the verdict. But those are extremely rare. They just virtually never occur. Is it within the power of a judge? Yes. But what judge is going to do this after a jury has found a person guilty beyond a reasonable doubt? It's just virtually never happens.
Yeah, but isn't that amazing? I mean, what does that mean? Or they just have ice water for blood? I mean, they got to, in many cases, know a lot better than the jury that this is really pretty trumped up. And for whatever reason, they had to go ahead and hold the trial, but, know that it's wrong. And yet they got people's lives on the line, their families, their lives.
That's one of the great tragedies of all this. Yes, that's right. In many of the cases, in which people have been shown after the fact to have been wrongfully convicted, the evidence that was at least presented in the courtroom might at the time have certainly indicated that the person was guilty. Often we've had people testify, police officers testify, hey, the guy confessed. And here is here's the confession, which he signed. Well, now, can we believe that? Well, of course we can. A judge believed it, and then, years later we find out we get DNA evidence or a confession from the actual culprit or something like that. The fact is that the system just really doesn't work quite as well as we have been told over the years that it should.
Well, now, I guess back before I was an anarchist, I used to argue that if we got rid of all the superfluous and unconstitutional government functions and we really pared it down to just criminal justice and a minimal national defense kind of a thing, then maybe we could use our democracy to really focus on things like who gets imprisoned and for how long and for what and whether it's a fair process for deciding, or for that matter, judgments held against them or whatever it is. That if we really just had these few tasks for government, that maybe we could focus on reforming them or just forming them in the first place into something much more fair. But I'm not even sure of that. I mean, it just seems like the whole thing is way too far gone, especially when you talk about how the judge virtually would never cancel a guilty verdict for whatever other incentives he has to go along with what's obviously, you know, in any other circumstances, it's just kidnapping somebody and unlawfully confining them, you know?
Well, yeah, of course, in many of these cases, the evidence was presented, the jury arrived at a verdict, the verdict was wrong, but who was the judge to set that aside? You know, even if the judge were to, disagreed, he can't really necessarily say that it was wrong at the time. And we've just never really gone back as a society to examine, what we're doing. I think there are many things that we could do to improve the system. We're never going to make it perfect. Any system that is designed by human beings will have imperfections, obviously. But we can do a lot to make it fairer and more accurate than it currently is.
Hey, what if we just ended the drug war and legalized, and I don't just mean possession, but legalized the drug business and just made it open market activity, just like Anheuser-Busch and alcohol?
I mean, we have seen, we learned in the 1930s that prohibition simply does not work. And that, enforcing these kinds of laws, I mean, they just don't work. Of course, we should, legalize drugs. We shouldn't be sending people to prison for these. And we could, cut down our prison population by 50% just overnight if we stopped, if we abandoned the drug laws.
Yeah, it seems like probably the courtrooms would be entirely different if they only had real work to do, instead of just being completely crammed full of nonsense. And really,
think about
all the things that are sacrificed in the name of the drug war, too, like the no-knock, and look how far we've come with a SWAT raid for every warrant instead of a, hostage situation at a bank, All this stuff is in the name of the drug war.
We can do a lot better than we're doing. And the policies that we have pursued for most of the last century been shown to have had great fallacy. And I think that, that we can, there's a lot that could be done. Then it would be really simple to make it a lot better. It costs $25,000 to $50,000 a year, depending on the degree of custody to keep somebody in prison, more than it costs, more than the tuition at an Ivy League school to keep somebody in prison. We have there was a recent Columbia University study that identified what they called million-dollar blocks. These are blocks in major cities in which the government is spending more than $1 million a year to incarcerate former residents of this city block. That's far more, 10 times as much as we're spending on social services. And many of these people are not, thought to be dangerous. I mean, we really need to rethink the entire criminal justice system and our approach to public safety.
That's funny. You remind me of this article I read in the Washington Post about America's efforts to work with the government of Mali over the last few years. And there's a State Department flunky in there says, to be honest, we just don't have a good way to measure that. What it is that they're doing and whether it's working and all the money they spend and whether they're giving it to the right people and what might happen as the result, like a coup and a war, these kinds of things. And I was just thinking, the only way that this kind of stuff is measured, at least by the institutions themselves, is in their success rates. right? I mean, that's the way everything is more, more, more. There's really the only incentive to, hey, knock it off would have to come from the outside, right? In fact, I'm even thinking, like, I've met lawyers before who people, you know, professors too, who really believe in the law. And that's why they're a lawyer, because they believe, they love the law. The law is the beautiful way that free men can cooperate in a society. They believe this, and yet they kind of, they can't see how badly it's all being betrayed, how the Constitution, the Bill of Rights is being thrown out the window, and how people are just being railroaded and run roughshod over. They're too far into it, right? It would have to be, at least you're a professor, that's not quite the same thing as, you know, a lawyer working in the court system kind of thing. But you know what I mean? It's going to, all of their incentives seem to be to make everything worse.
Yeah.
To be blind.
You know, I think we just need to rethink this whole approach. And, you know, in much of the world, you know, it has been re-examined, and we don't have to do what we're doing. It's costly, it's cruel, and you know, we can just do much better.
All right, everybody, that is Rob Warden, and he is executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University School of Law. And you can find them at law.northwestern.edu. And then check out at allgov.com this great article. Report catalogs exonerated Americans who served more than 10,000 years in prison. Thanks so much for your time, Rob. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out WallStreetWindow.com. It's a financial blog written by former hedge fund manager Mike Swanson, who's investing in commodities, mining stocks, and European markets. Wall Street Window is unique in that Mike shows people what he's really investing in and updates you when he buys or sells in his main account. Mike thinks his positions are going to go up because of all the money the Federal Reserve is printing to finance the deficit. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. And Mike's got a great new book coming out, so also keep your eye on writermichaelswanson.com for more details. Hey everybody, Scott Horton here, inviting you to check out the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org. They've got a brand new website with new and improved access to more than 20 years worth of essays promoting the cause of liberty. And FFF's writers, including Jacob Hornberger, Jim Bovard, Sheldon Richman, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and more, aren't just good. They're the best at opposing and discrediting our corrupt overlords in Washington and their warfare, welfare, regulatory police state. That's the Future Freedom Foundation's new and improved site at fff.org. The Emergency Committee for Israel, Brookings, Heritage, AIPAC, WINEP, GINSA, PNAC, CNAS, the AEI, FPI, CFR, and CSP. It sure does seem sometimes like the war party's got the foreign policy debate in D.C. all locked up. But not quite. Check out the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. They put America first, opposing our government's world empire, and especially their Middle Eastern madness. That's the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. Hey ladies, Scott Horton here. If you would like truly youthful, healthy, and healthy-looking skin, there is one very special company you need to visit. Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. Dagny & Lane has revolutionized the industry with a full line of products made from organic and all-natural ingredients that penetrate deeply with nutrient-rich ionic minerals and antioxidants for healthy and beautiful skin. That's Dagny & Lane at dagnyandlane.com. And for a limited time, add promo code SCOTT15 at checkout for a 15% discount. Man, you need some Liberty stickers for the back of your truck. At LibertyStickers.com, they've got great state hate, like Pearl Harbor was an inside job. The Democrats want your guns. U.S. Army, die for Israel. Police brutality, not just for black people anymore. And government school, why you and your kids are so stupid. Check out these and 1,000 other great ones at LibertyStickers.com. And of course, they'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck.